Chapter 25. Images of Catherine Solomon played in the golem's mind as his taxi climbed the ridge toward Crucifix Bastion. He could still see her on stage at Prague Castle, delivering her remarkable lecture. The golem had attended, sitting quietly in back, dressed unremarkably, as he was now. The golem felt drawn to Catherine's ideas, sensing at times that she had been speaking directly to him.
"I am living proof, Catherine, that you are correct."
For over an hour, Catherine had held the crowd in Vladislav Hall in rapt attention, alive with the thrill of new possibility, a fresh outlook on the workings of human consciousness. One moment in particular had spoken to him.
"There exists an extraordinary phenomenon," Catherine had said, "that proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that our traditional views of consciousness are entirely wrong. It's called sudden savant syndrome, and the clinical definition is as follows: the abrupt manifestation in a human mind of a unique skill or knowledge that previously was non-existent."
She smiled.
"In other words, you get conked on the head and you wake up a virtuoso violinist or fluent in Portuguese or a genius at math, where you previously possessed none of these skills."
Catherine quickly ran through a series of slides and video clips of individuals who had experienced sudden savant syndrome. Ruben Ansemo, a 16-year-old American who was kicked in the head during a soccer game, fell into a coma, and woke up speaking perfect Spanish. Derek Amaro, a middle-aged man who dove into a pool, hit his head, and woke up a musical genius and virtuoso pianist. Orlando L. Sorrell, a 10-year-old boy struck by a baseball who found he suddenly had the ability to do astonishingly complicated calendrical calculations.
"The obvious question," Catherine said, "is how is this possible? How could a kick to the head magically impart into a brain the entirety of the Spanish language, or a lifetime's practice on the violin, or the ability to pinpoint precise dates that are centuries in the past or future?" "The answer is, in our current model of the brain, all of these events are, quite literally, impossible."
She motioned to a young man eyeing his phone.
"Sir, imagine you hurled that phone against the wall, and when you picked it up, your photo gallery contained brand new photos of places you'd never been."
"Impossible," the man agreed.
The golem understood, of course, how this could happen. He understood why cosmic signals got crossed, and clearly so did Catherine Solomon.
"Then, of course, there's the astonishing tale of Michael Thomas Boatwright."
Catherine went on to tell the story of a U.S. Navy vet who was found unconscious in a hotel room and awoke speaking fluent Swedish.
He had no recollection of his own life, instead recalling his life as a Swede named Johan Ek.
Driving her point home, she relayed the well-known story of James Leininger, a 2-year-old boy haunted by nightmares of being trapped in the cockpit of a burning fighter jet. In his waking hours, young James drew pictures of a burning jet and talked through complicated pre-flight routines using technical vocabulary that his parents, and most certainly the young child, had never heard. When his frightened parents asked him where he got this information, the boy declared his name was not James Leininger, but rather James Houston, and that he was a fighter pilot who flew off Anatoma with his friend Jack. To the parents' astonishment, a search of World War II records revealed a fighter pilot named James Houston had flown off the Natoma Bay aircraft carrier with fellow pilot Jack Larson. Houston had crashed and died, trapped in his burning cockpit. The story only got stranger from there, and it was now the subject of numerous documentaries as well as endless online speculation.
These phenomena are inexplicable, but they are real, she continued. They are true anomalies, and they so fundamentally undermine the current model of consciousness that we now find ourselves at a crossroads of human understanding, a juncture where an ever-widening circle of brilliant minds, neuroscientists, physicists, biologists, and philosophers are seeing no choice but to accept the same shocking truth, quite simply that our established scientific views of how the human mind works are no longer adequate. It's time for a new model. It's time to admit we don't know the answer to a very simple question. Where do our thoughts, talents, and ideas come from? And that, my friends, is the topic of tonight's talk.
The Golem's taxi rounded the final corner toward Crucifix Bastion, and the lab came into sight in the distance. But when he saw what was before him, he immediately pounded on the plexiglass divider.
Zastavte! Zastavte!
The driver lurched to an abrupt stop. The Golem thought he would be alone here. But to his surprise, an Uzi sedan was parked in front of the building.
Nobody should be here at this hour.
He sent the taxi away and approached the bastion slowly, on foot, moving discreetly through the woods that surrounded the facility. As he drew closer, he saw that the entry door to the building was shattered. The foyer was gaping open, its floor scattered with glass.
Did Uzi break into Gessner's lab?
If so, the Golem suddenly feared he might have difficulty retrieving what he had come for.
Without it, I won't be able to gain access to Threshold.
The Golem saw nobody moving inside the shattered foyer, but he did notice movement at the far end of the courtyard. 75 yards away, a lanky man in a suit gazed out over the low enclosure wall and spoke on the phone.
An Uzi officer? One of Gessner's contacts?
Either way, his presence here was a problem and needed to be rectified.